Sorry about the delay. There's people are upside down on Highway 52. It took a little while to get past them. So the let's see. This morning we have the Minnesota Zoo with us, and welcome to the committee. And introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Lee Emke. I'm the director and CEO of the Minnesota Zoo. And I'm going to do a brief presentation on sort of some overall background on the zoo, just to bring you all back up to speed, and then talk about our bonding requests for this year. Let's see if we get this going here. Okay, the Minnesota Zoo we celebrated our 25th birthday this past summer. I'm going to talk about its status as an attraction in the state of Minnesota, but I wanted to talk a little bit about our other primary mission, which is conservation. What you're seeing up on the screen are a number of Mexican wolf pups that were born at the zoo this last summer. We had 7 born. And those 7 animals represented 5% of the entire world's population of this endangered species. One of the great roles of zoos today is developing breeding programs for rare animals in our institution, and also doing outreach to the places in the wild where these animals still live. These Mexican wolf pups, some of them will be reintroduced to their native habitat in New Mexico and Arizona, which again really shows the evolution of where zoos have come in the last 20 years from being consumers of wildlife to net producers. But most of us think of the Minnesota Zoo as an attraction, which we certainly are. For 25 years, we've averaged nearly or over 1 million visitors a year. Of those, 200,000 plus come from greater Minnesota, so we are clearly not just a regional attraction, but we are a statewide attraction of significance. And consistently, the Convention and Visitors Bureau for the various areas in the state have always named the zoo one of the top 5 attractions in the state of Minnesota. And all of that has some significant economic impact. A study was done several years ago that looked at the direct and indirect effects of the zoo on the economy of Minnesota, and it's significant. As you can see, $60 million annually stems from the existence of the Minnesota Zoo. We also, again, we're thought of as an attraction primarily, but when you think about the numbers of people who visit the zoo and the programs that we offer, we are in fact the largest environmental education center in the entire state of Minnesota. Over 100,000 school kids make visits to the zoo every year, some for formal programs, some just in field trips. We provide outreach to the entire state through our Zoomobile program. Some of those aspects you're going to see today, later in this hearing, and also at noon today in the rotunda, we will have our Zoomobile staff and animals present to welcome all of you to the session. And you're probably all aware that the zoo is the home to a partner organization, the School for Environmental Studies, which has received national awards for its innovative programming. Again, it's a partner located right on zoo grounds. The zoo, although we're a state agency, we've been challenged over the years to become more entrepreneurial, and I think the record is very clear that we've succeeded. This facility that you're seeing right here is our Discovery Bay exhibit, which in addition to being an exhibit and an educational center is also a revenue generation focal point for the zoo, a place that we rent out for events in the evening. And this is one of a whole host of activities that the zoo has developed over the last 10 years to become significantly more economically self-sufficient despite our state agency status. As part of that effort, we've developed a very strong public-private partnership. This slide shows the Wells Fargo Family Farm, which opened in 2000. This exhibit was completely paid for with private funds raised by the Minnesota Zoo Foundation, and its annual operating budget is underwritten by the foundation as well. I'm not sure you could find another state agency where a private group has come in and completely paid for a new facility and completely pays for its upkeep. It truly is a public-private partnership, and we want to grow, obviously, the private side, and we'll be talking a little bit more about that later. This chart shows the history of funding for the operation of the Minnesota Zoo. As you all know, we are a full state agency, yet we've never relied entirely on state funding for operations. But back in 1985, you can see that 60% of our budget came from the annual or the biennial state appropriation. Today, that number has been reduced to 39%. And we've made up the difference through significantly growing our earned revenue programs, the entrepreneurial programs that I mentioned earlier, and our contributed revenue, which comes through the Zoo Foundation. And for some benchmarking information, if you look at the line that just went across the screen, that is the national average for zoos. Zoos around the country, including zoos that are run by nonprofit organizations and are essentially private, operate with about 50% public funding on average across the board. Very few zoos can operate independently of government support, and as you can see, we're now significantly below the national average for public support for a zoo or aquarium. And the last couple of years, we've seen some very significant cuts to our operating budget from the state. We were at the table with all the other agencies, and although I think we've been able to adapt to it, some of the cuts that we had to make have been significant and are noticed by the public. Our Zoo Lab exhibit, very popular with our members and younger children in our audience, was one of the things that we decided last year we could not continue to operate. And it's been noticed. Our public is starting to see that some of the facilities that used to be at the zoo aren't there now. We've gone to some seasonal operations on some of our exhibits, like the family farm. And it's not a direction that bodes particularly well for the long term, but it's what we needed to do last year given the budget crisis in the state. And that's coupled with a longer-term trend. This shows our attendance over the last 13 years, and you can see that it's essentially been level, but in the last 5 years it's actually been declining at about 4 to 5% annually. The reasons for this are many. If you look nationally, many other zoos and cultural institutions are experiencing a similar level of flat attendance. But I think the biggest issue for us is that we have not been able to keep up, essentially, with our competition. People's leisure time today is, the demands on it are much greater than ever. And what's offered out there in the arena of family entertainment has significantly, the quality and quantity has really grown over the years. Other institutions, zoos and museums that have developed major new exhibits have been able to reverse this trend. We have not been able to because of essentially the lack of major new investment in new facilities at the zoo for the last 10 or 15 years. We've tried to combat that with some in-house efforts, and they've been successful in maintaining the attendance at the levels that we've been able to achieve. And a lot of it's been, we're trying to address some of the things we've heard from the public since the day the zoo opened, about issues like the distance of the public from the animals, the lack of African animals, a number of other things that from day one our zoo visitors have been concerned about. So a couple of years ago we opened a new meerkat exhibit that offers this intimate and very interactive viewing encounter. Our tiger exhibits, which are quite large and were one of the exhibits that people were complained about the most early on at the zoo because the animals weren't visible, we've created opportunities for very close encounters that's been extremely popular and successful. And this coming summer, we'll be doing some renovations in our tropics building, adding some new animals with very high public appeal, these ring-tailed lemurs, that will, again, create that sense of something new and novel at the zoo that we know we need to compete in the marketplace. But those are essentially stopgap measures, and we realize that longer term we need to make much more significant strides in developing new facilities and essentially reinventing the zoo. And we started that process out a couple of years ago working with a team of consultants who've done zoos internationally, and we've developed a long-term master plan for the Minnesota Zoo that includes a major series of new exhibits and a plan for sequencing and phasing in those exhibits. And the focus of our capital request this year will be to begin the process of developing this master plan. There are three aspects to our request to the legislature this year. The first is asset maintenance. We have a 25-year-old facility. Studies were done several years ago that indicated there were over $30 million in deferred maintenance items at the zoo. That's with our existing physical plant. 2 years ago in the bonding bill, we did receive $3 million, which we have started to apply against that backlog. It's been very helpful, but there's a lot more to be done, and part of our request is to continue that asset maintenance. We need new capital projects, as I said, to stimulate attendance and to help us with our earned revenue line. Our attendance, our earned revenue is so key, so tied to attendance. It's a direct proportional relationship. We need to bring people through the door in order to increase those earned revenues. And finally, we have a request, and it won't be a bonding request, but it's an attempt to have the state essentially assume the debt service on Discovery Bay. When Discovery Bay was built in the mid-90s, the state issued bonds, but on the condition that the zoo was obligated to pay all of those bonds back. That's a pretty unusual relationship for a state agency, and it's proven to be quite a difficult situation for the zoo. We are looking this year to have the remaining $9.2 million of the zoo's portion of those bonds to have that debt assumed by the state, which will have the impact of greatly, it'll have the impact of rebuilding our operating budget by as much as $1 million a year initially, which would make up for some of the cuts that we've received in the last two sessions. So, asset preservation, our request this year is for $10 million to continue that asset preservation work. Again, our existing physical plant is, in some cases, crumbling. There's a shopping list of items, again, $30 million worth, and we want to attack it vigorously this year. The second and maybe the key piece of our bonding request is for $48 million to begin the implementation of our master plan. You can see the highlighted areas on this diagram show the two zones that we want to develop with this bonding money. It's tempting in a zoo of 485 acres to want to sort of leapfrog out and develop new exhibits in undeveloped land, but our initial focus is really going to be on infill development, taking the area that's already been built at the zoo and improving it and strengthening it and adding variety and interest and new exhibits within the core of the existing zoo. And let me take you through that proposal. This is our current front door. Kind of a sad product of its time, of the mid-70s. It does not suggest anything about the environmental messages that the zoo's trying to impart. It's quite cold and impersonal, and beyond that, it doesn't work in terms of the number of visitors. 1 million people a year are going through these four doors. It's inefficient. It leaves not a very good impression both coming and going. This is the first and last thing you see as a zoo visitor, and it's really never worked since the day the zoo opened. Our proposal is to essentially rebuild that main building and bring our public in at the upper level into a new facility that we're calling the Biodiversity Center. That's an umbrella name for an exhibit area that's actually, it's more than an exhibit area. It's a public welcoming zone, it's an education center, it's a revenue generating center, and it's a place to, to introduce people to the offerings of the zoo and to bring them into the world of animals and nature immediately upon arrival. We want to add new animals. Again, we know our public surveys indicate that people like the zoo, but there's always a sense that there aren't enough animals, the variety isn't great enough, and some of the mix of animals that we currently exhibit is not what people are expecting when they come to a major zoo. We want to add things like primates, jellyfish, octopus, all in immediately as you come in the front door, so that there's a sense of the diversity of animal life and a sense of activity and and liveliness as soon as you come in our front door. We also want to add this exhibit experience, which we're calling the Kids Zone, which will be aimed at those younger members of our audience who currently maybe aren't well served by the zoo and its long pathways and the like. We want to create an activity area where they can explore by going into trees, underwater, in a safe environment where parents can keep an eye on them, but it's really play learning, which is something we want to bring to all of our exhibits, but really focus it here in the Biodiversity Center. And we also want to replace some of our aging exhibits, the old snow monkey exhibit, which has outlived its usefulness, with a major new anchor exhibit, part of the Biodiversity Center, that will feature the animals of coastal South America. You'll come in up at the upper level, grassy plains with animals like giant anteaters, Patagonian cavies, which is a rodent that stands about 2.5 feet tall, pretty interesting critter. And that pathway will then lead you down to the edge of the coastline, where a spectacular new exhibit of penguins will be featured. And again, we're looking at the list of animals that our visitors for 25 plus years have been asking for at the zoo, and selecting among those the ones that we think we can add that will have high visitor appeal but also meet our education and conservation goals. Doing a great penguin exhibit with above water and underwater viewing we know can be a spectacular attraction that will tie in very nicely with our existing marine mammal and shark exhibit. And by doing all of those new exhibit areas and the public service and the revenue generating facilities, including new event rental spaces, a much improved retail area and food service all up on the upper level of our main building, it will allow us to convert the lower level of that main building into a much larger education center. Education, again, one of our three primary mission elements. We're turning people away now from some of our courses because we don't have the physical spaces to put them in. We want to develop classrooms. This is one that I worked on at the Bronx Zoo in New York. It's a classroom, but it's actually built into the middle of an exhibit. So the views out the window in this case are of gorillas and African monkeys. What we're planning here in the Biodiversity Center would be similar spaces that would look into the new exhibits there, the South American exhibit and others. Again, increased capacity for education, which means, among other things, new revenue streams for us. These spaces are also great for event rental, which is another growing and important revenue stream that we want to develop at the zoo. But again, the bottom line is to create more spaces where we can do more education for more Minnesotans more of the time. Again, that's what it's all about. We want to increase physical space at the zoo, but also do more outreach through distance learning labs and other things that allow us to reach the entire state virtually from our facility in Apple Valley. Okay, the other component of our request is to take another spot of the zoo, which has a very tired and dated feel, which is our central plaza. Right now, this is the first thing you see when you leave the main building of the zoo and come out into our outdoor grounds. A plaza that doesn't welcome you, it doesn't tell you what's happening around the corner. Again, a very underwhelming space. Our idea is to convert that into one that's going to be spectacular and intriguing and really set up the visit in a very powerful way. You'll be seeing, instead of the harsh concrete that exists today, it'll be a natural environment, cliffs, large trees, both living and dead. You'll hear the sound of the ocean, sea fog. It'll be a very intriguing gateway to the north. And that is the primary focus of our outdoor exhibit initiative this year, is to develop a new introduction to our outdoor existing northern trail, but one that'll be very different from anything that exists at the zoo today. And the idea is to take people on a journey, leaving Minnesota and heading to another part of the world that people don't think about very much, but is one of the great wildlife spectacles in the world, which happens to be right on the 45th parallel, just as the Twin Cities are. Over on the far east coast of Asia in Russia, is an environment that is very similar to Minnesota's in some ways in terms of weather and vegetation, but very different in others in terms of the types of animals that live there. It's the only place in the world where you can find grizzly bears, tigers, and leopards living in the same environment. And that will be part of what we'll be featuring in this Gateway to the North. This is a bird's eye view of this exhibit, which we're developing on the site of our old children's zoo, which is currently unused. It's prime real estate right near the core of the zoo. And again, instead of leaping out and developing the far reaches of the zoo, we want to redevelop our core. And within that, create, again, this experience that's an immersion experience, taking people into a simulation of the animal's environment rather than gazing at them from afar. And it'll include many elements along the way beyond just viewing animals. A lot of interpretation, a lot of storylines about the interaction of humans and animals over time in an environment. Again, lots of similarities to Minnesota, but many differences as well. Great compare and contrast opportunities. And we're going to start you out down low at the edge. This would be representing the Pacific Ocean, and it's a place where we want to have crashing waves, fog, mist, the sound of seagulls, again, really transport you to a different world, and also make it interactive. We know down in our Central Plaza, we used to have a water fountain that kids could run through, and that was one of the most popular things in the zoo. It had nothing to do with the zoo collection or our messages, but people loved it anyway. Well, here's an opportunity where we can have the same experience. Water that splashes if you want to get wet in the summertime, but it's part of an overall storyline that connects to the animals. So again, learning and play seamlessly connected. And the first animal exhibit here that you'll see will be for sea otters. Wonderful, active animal, very popular in zoos and aquariums where they are exhibited. Can work year-round in Minnesota and have some great conservation stories. And again, we think of these animals as western, west coast United States, but they lived and still remain in small remnant populations over on the other side of the Pacific as well. So we'll start with the sea otters, and again, views of them both above and below water. We want to create those up-close viewing opportunities wherever possible, and underwater viewing is a great way to do it. But it'll be more than just an animal exhibit at a time. We want to create landscapes where the animals are seemingly roaming, unconfined, showing the connections between the different animals and the environment. This is a shot of an exhibit at the Woodland Park Zoo in Seattle, where grizzly bears and mountain goats live seemingly together but are actually separated by hidden barriers. And that's the concept that we want to use throughout this new exhibit, creating this landscape with animals that you're exploring as a visitor. And coming up upon views of animals both distant and close up that are very dramatic, like seeing a great Russian grizzly bear up on top of a promontory overlooking the whole site. But again, making sure that we offer opportunities for up-close viewing. The opportunity here that we're really excited about is to have a rushing stream filled with trout that's in the bear exhibit. So the bears will have something to occupy a lot of their time, so instead of typical bored zoo bears, you'll have active hunting, fishing bears, which is great for the bears, but it's also great for the public, creating a much more engaging experience. And again, finding ways to bring the animals up close, giving them a natural environment, but attracting them close to the visitors through all the incentives that we can build in through good exhibit design. This diagram shows the lower area is where the visitors will be seeing the bears in this split-level view underwater fishing for trout. But above the main public area will be a very large structure that will be hidden from the public. And again, this is a revenue-generating opportunity for us. It will be an event center that can be used both by our education department or by our group sales department. We know there's a market out there for unique meeting venues. The zoo currently has a number of them, but they're only available in the evening because the public is using the exhibit. This will allow us to use it day and night as a place for business meetings and social events. Again, a revenue stream to help support the operation of the exhibit. That'll feature a pretty spectacular view down into the stream bed with the brown bears down below. The exhibit continues beyond the bears. You start to move uphill into a more forested area where some unique animals from the Russian forest will be featured, including wild boar, which I think will be the sleeper of this exhibit. They're pretty spectacular and interesting animal. And they're the keystone to the food pyramid that the tigers and leopards that live in this area. This is their primary food source, and there's some great stories to tell there as well. And finally, at the top of the hill, right before you approach our existing Siberian tiger exhibits, will be an exhibit of this animal, the Amur leopard, which is the most northerly ranging of all the leopards. They live in Siberia. But there are probably no more than 30 of these animals left in the wild in Russia. We're currently involved with a number of zoos around the world in a cooperative breeding program to try to save these animals in zoos, and we're also supporting research and protection efforts in their native range in Russia. By developing an exhibit of them, again, giving close-up spectacular views of these guys, but it's also a place to talk about that conservation work and to get our visitors involved in it, which again, tying together the entertainment aspect, creating an exciting experience for people, having them learn something along the way, and making it part of a conservation initiative. That's what we want all of the zoo to do, and this Gateway to the North experience will really encapsulate all of those goals in a very dramatic way. So the total investment we're looking for is significant, but if you look across the country at what's happened and what's happening in other cities and other regions, you can see that our total request, although large, is not out of line with what's happened nationally. Commitments of state or other public monies towards capital projects. You can see the range here, right down the road. The Como Zoo has been investing about $28 million in new facilities, much of that from the state of Minnesota, on down the line to, you know, $100 million-plus commitments by the city of Los Angeles to their zoo. So our request in that context this year, again, to recap, new capital projects, the Biodiversity Center and the Gateway to the North, $48 million total request. Asset preservation, $10 million, to start to chip away at those repair issues around the zoo, and the debt relief, which is a total of $9.2 million. Bills have been introduced to support all of these, which total a very significant $67.2 million in aggregate. The governor's recommendations, although they don't meet our total request, we're quite pleased by the level of support indicated by the governor, who came out to the zoo and did an announcement a couple of weeks ago that he's supporting the following. $19 million for new capital, which would pay for the entire Gateway to the North complex, $6 million in asset preservation, and again, that very critical debt relief piece. So a total package that is the largest ever recommended by a governor in the history of the zoo, one that we're very confident will spur private interest and private investment in the zoo, which I will be speaking to a little bit more shortly, and really get us on the way to reversing some of the issues that really have confronted the zoo for most of its lifetime, which include a really pretty low level of public investment in the capital program at the zoo. One other comparison I'd like to make, which is the only other state-owned and operated zoo in the country, is the North Carolina Zoo. It opened just a couple years before the Minnesota Zoo, but over a period of time, over basically the last 25, 26 years, over $500 million has been invested by the state in the North Carolina Zoo, both for capital programs and for operating expenses. In contrast, the Minnesota Zoo has received, over the same period of time, $187 million. So you can see, again, the level of support in North Carolina has resulted in a zoo that is considered by everyone in that state a statewide treasure. And there's very little debate about its significance as a conservation, education, and recreation resource. I think that the Minnesota Zoo has performed very well, given the lack of support that we've had from the state in terms of capital investment. And it really is, we think, a critical crossroads this year to get things moving back in the right direction. That kind of investment, however, obviously you want to look for what are the returns. And we think there are some very significant and tangible returns on that investment. Our conservation work. We can add new rare species. We can do more awareness creation. We can do a lot for conservation if we can develop new facilities. Education. We know more and more kids these days are isolated and don't have that connection with the environment or with living animals. The zoo is a great opportunity to increase that environmental connection, that environmental literacy. And again, our proposal includes programs that will really improve and increase our education outreach. Leveraging private sector support. It's always been an issue for the zoo that the private sector has said, well, the zoo is a state entity, the state should take care of things. We've really, I think, turned that around in the last several years, and the Zoo Foundation has contributed more than $18 million to the zoo over the last 10 years or so. And so there's a growing interest and capacity, I think, for private support for our programs, both operating and capital. But a signal from the state that the state is serious about this institution and is making a commitment to it, we know can leverage very significant growth in both our annual and our long-term capital fundraising efforts. And the final one is maybe a little bit more intangible, but it's something the governor has cited several times in relation to the zoo, is the quality of life in Minnesota. We are already one of those top five attractions in the state, but we're just scratching the surface of our potential in terms of being a destination for residents of Minnesota, but also for visitors and tourists who are coming here. We're offering recreation that has some great added benefits, the conservation and education piece that comes with the fun that people have at the zoo, I think are a significant contributor to the quality of life in Minnesota. And in the end, this is probably the most compelling argument, I think, for making this investment. So I'm going to take any of your questions or comments maybe at the end of the testimony, but before I do that, I'd like to introduce a member of the Minnesota Zoo Foundation, Susan Palumbo, who will speak to the commitment of the Zoo Foundation to the future of the zoo.
Thank you, Lee.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, distinguished members of the committee, I'm Susan Palumbo, and I am a trustee of the Minnesota Zoo Foundation. And Lee, thank you. Just watching this presentation really reinforces the decision about why I joined the Minnesota Zoo Foundation as a trustee and the passion and commitment that I feel for this organization. It's the leadership and the vision that Lee brings, the organization, and the excitement of that master plan that really encourages me and keeps me volunteering my time and my money. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about the great resource that our state has in the Minnesota Zoo. And I think the Zoo Foundation itself is a great example of the public-private partnerships that we like to talk about. Our Zoo Foundation is made up of individuals who really have a commitment to the education, the conservation, and the recreation missions of the zoo. Although we come from a wide variety of backgrounds and occupations, we do have a singular passion, and that is dedicating our time and our resources and the relationships that we have in the community to raise money for the zoo. And we have done that. As Lee mentioned, the Zoo Foundation, we're proud to say, has contributed $18 million in private funds. In fact, Lee showed you some pictures of the Wells Fargo Family Farm, an award-winning, wonderful addition to the zoo. I was out there with my husband this fall, enjoying the bonfire, seeing the baby animals, and listening to the volunteers talk about how the working family farm operates. And that was completely built by private funds and continues to be operated by private funds. The Zoo Foundation is very excited about this master plan that Lee has shared with you. And we really support all aspects of the plan, and we continue to be supportive. And the Minnesota Zoo Foundation needs to hear about the public support component of that. We're ready to support it privately. We support the original request that Lee reviewed with you, the $48 million for the master plan, the two exhibits that Lee went over, and you have details in your packet, $10 million for asset preservation, and the debt service payment relief on Discovery Bay. However, as Lee mentioned, Governor Pawlenty's recommendation is something that we absolutely could get behind. That proposal that Governor Pawlenty has put forward would allow us to construct the Bears of the Ussuri exhibit while taking care of the needed infrastructure and maintenance. By providing this, we are ready for a capital campaign to help fill out other aspects of the master plan. So I would encourage you to recommend and vote for the zoo's request. This will allow us to continue to move forward with this great public-private partnership, which makes Minnesota such a great place to live. We have a great thing in place at the Minnesota Zoo. We were able to attract somebody of the caliber of Lee, the leadership, the vision. We have a wonderful master plan that really brings in the best of world-class zoo design that could really change the way we experience our zoo. We have enthusiastic private support that is just waiting for a public commitment. We have very loyal audiences, 1 million visitors a year, and we're looking forward to a public commitment. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Have any questions for members? Professor McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Plumbo, for your presentation. If I remember right, when the previous governor, and I think I'm remembering this right, vetoed a project of yours, didn't we have, or maybe it didn't get in, but didn't we have at that time a private commitment for like $4 million or something? Is that still out there?
I'll take that. Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, yes, 2 years ago, the Zoo Board committed, or the Zoo Board and the Zoo Foundation Board committed to a 1-to-4 match on a proposal for funding. Our request to the state at the time was for $18.6 million. It was over time and through the process reduced eventually to $8.1 million that was passed out of the bonding bill, but then subsequently vetoed by Governor Ventura. So the commitment by the Zoo Foundation and Zoo Board members at that time was essentially, it was contingent upon receiving a certain level of state support. So that basically, it was a major roadblock for going forward with the capital campaign. Without the state piece, it wasn't, the private pledges were not something we could call in. Those pledges remain, that $4 million core. And again, I'm just talking about the immediate family of the Zoo Board and Zoo Foundation members. We've not committed to a public campaign yet, again, because of the uncertainty of the level of state funding. That $4 million in commitments does exist, and as Susan mentioned, we would like to apply that to the later or the next stages of the master plan, depending on what the outcome of the bonding session is. Again, most of those commitments were made with specific language that required significant state commitment before we could call in the pledges. And the definition of what is significant state commitment was left up to each individual. So we will need to go back on that.
Representative McNamara.
Real quick. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then a quick follow-up. That was a state commitment in the neighborhood of $8 million. This one potentially, if we look either at the governor's or the bill, is substantially more than that. So do you feel good that with us stepping forward with this huge first step, that the foundation board and the board members will be right behind us in moving forward?
I do. I feel like the Bears of the Usuri exhibit is something that is very exciting. It brings in some of the charismatic mega vertebrates. It's world-class design, and I think we need that momentum both for our fundraising, and we have brought in a number of people like myself that have experience doing fundraising in the community. You really need something to create some momentum to move forward, and we believe that the Bears of the Usuri exhibit will create just that. Momentum not only for the visitors and the general community within Minnesota, but also for fundraising.
Other questions?
Can I, I do have one other guest who I'd like to call to testify, if we may, and then perhaps we could take all the questions at the end. Would that work, Chairman?
We'll get right to it. Mr. Helen.
Mr. Chair, thanks. I'm just curious about the new exhibit. How many Russian bear and emu, leopard, and wild boar are proposed to be in the new exhibit?
Currently, we're looking at a bear facility that would hold 3 to 4 animals, a leopard facility that would hold 3 to 5, although they probably wouldn't all be in on exhibit at the same time because they're not social animals. Again, 3 to 4 sea otters. So the numbers of animals are not great, but all of these species are animals that live essentially by themselves in nature. But it will be enough to more than fill the exhibit and create an exciting experience.
Can I just ask a follow-up? How does the Russian grizzly differ from the American grizzly?
It's quite a bit larger. There's actually, this is a biology lesson if you're interested, there's a species of bear called the brown bear, generic name for animals that live in Europe, Asia, and North America. The grizzly bear is one variety of brown bear. You may be familiar also with the Kodiak bear. That's another sort of brown bear. The Russian variety is more akin and similar to the Kodiak bear than to the grizzly bear. So they're quite a bit larger. They're very impressive. But they are essentially the same animal as the grizzly bear. Okay. All right. I'd like to ask Mayor Mary Hammond from Apple Valley to join us.
Thank you. Mayor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here today amongst friends, and I want to say Chairman Osmond, Dennis. Denny, we usually call you Denny, mm-hmm. So let's get right down to it, and distinguished members of this committee. It is truly a pleasure and an honor to be here with such a fine person as Lee Emke. I am so excited that he is the director of the Minnesota Zoo. What bold vision you have, and I want to say thank you to the foundation as well. Aggressive, bold, they understand good business sense, and I very much appreciate that.
Mayor, for the record, if I could get you to identify yourself.
My name is Mary Hayman Rowland, and I am the mayor of Apple Valley. And I'm very proud to be the host community for the Minnesota Zoo. And I want to thank right up front Chairman Denny Osmond for his vision and his realization of how important this commitment, this investment in our state is in authoring the bill for the for the Minnesota Zoo. The zoo, as you've heard, opened its doors in 1978. We've seen its 25th birthday. This great attraction, as you've heard this morning, brings in 1 million people to the zoo. I think we could even do better than that. And even at this time when we've seen the degradation of the zoo because of the lack of support and the lack of funding, you still are receiving $60 million worth of revenues. That's pretty amazing. As you know, the zoo has faced many challenges, and I believe that the foundation and the leadership from Lee Emke and the staff at the Minnesota Zoo, I want to thank you all, is truly a bold vision that is going to make a difference for our community, for our region, for our state, for our nation, for the world. The new plan, the new master plan, is very comprehensive. It's far-reaching in its vision. It has a realistic business plan, and it shows how the Minnesota Zoo really can reach its full potential. So why is it important that we invest in the zoo? One of the things that I learned from Lee Emke, which I think is significant, is that there are two state zoos in the United States. Now, hearing that, the zoos that are across the nation are being supported by an average of 50% by their states. Now, as I understand it, our state supports the Minnesota Zoo by 39%. I think there's something wrong with that picture. Even though I do believe in private-public partnership, and I think you've shown us very clearly that that private-public partnership pays off, and I believe that the investment that the state makes in the Minnesota Zoo will truly leverage those dollars to help. The education of our children in the state of Minnesota is clearly important to all of us. The Minnesota Zoo educates children through all walks of life, in all parts of the state. Hundreds of busloads of children come into our community to the Minnesota Zoo to be educated, where they can apply the theory that they learn in a classroom to a real-world classroom. You talked about the classes that happen through the course of time over the at the Minnesota Zoo that you offer. I know when those classes are being offered, because I'm also a parent of four children, that you have to be there bright and early, and if you're not, you won't get into those classes. I think that those classes are very, very important to the education of our children in science and social studies, and learning about applying the knowledge and the theory that they learn in the classroom, right in that world classroom, and I want to see that expanded. The zoo is home to an award-winning School of Environmental Studies. This school has been written up in the Harvard Review and the Wall Street Journal. It's reformed education across the world. The Hershey Corporation, which is a private institution, has invested millions of dollars in a K-12 system that replicates the School of Environmental Studies. The Gates Foundation is going to be partnering with the school, as well as the GLEF, which is the George Lucas Educational Foundation. They understand that this is education for the future, and the zoo is the home to it and a partner in that process. As the governor said, recreation and tourism is a critical part of our economy. And when you hear that this institution is one of the top five places, attractions, entertainment in this state, how can we not support this? It just makes good business sense. This is an example of what I call a very strong private-public partnership. And I want to emphasize that because the private has been the strength over the course of years. We want to promote tourism. We want to create that world-class tourist attraction. And as I said before, we're already bringing $60 million of revenue into, and I say we because I feel like I'm a part of the zoo. I feel that kind of strong commitment to the zoo. But it's already bringing in, $60 million. Think about what we can do. Get outside that box and imagine the possibilities of what this investment, this resurgence into the zoo can accomplish. I think the governor is right because the governor has said quality of life is important to Minnesotans. And the Minnesota Zoo has been a tradition. And we want to continue that tradition to exist. We don't want to lose it. And we want to keep finding people like Lee Emke here at the zoo because you are going to be someone who is really going to make a difference. And lastly, you've heard and you've seen this beautiful presentation that the zoo has given. Conservation education is important. Our children need to understand how important it is to the world. And the significant impact that this conservation education with Ron Tilson
I want to see him do a show, by the way. He needs to get out there. We need to see what the Minnesota Zoo is doing. It's kind of one of the best-kept secrets. But the impact that it's making on our entire world is significant. Lee Emke has asked, and the Zoo Foundation and the board has asked, for $67 million worth of investment. Now that means $48 million. And I say innovation. I remember being at the inauguration, and the Governor Pawlenty said, in these tough times, we have to be able to innovate, think outside the box. I think these people, I think you are thinking outside the box. That $10 million that will be for asset preservation, you know yourself. If you own your home, if you don't take care of it, it's going to decline in value. Why would we want to do something to such a wonderful, wonderful facility? This is a diamond in the rough now, but I believe that with this investment, it will shine. And taking over the debt relief is very practical and important. Why should we expect our state zoo to assume that responsibility? And I think that the governor has great wisdom in realizing that importance. Legislators, the decisions you make today will have a lasting impact into the future in all the areas that I've discussed, in the asset maintenance, in the innovation, in the renaissance of the zoo, and also in the assumption of the debt service. I want to be able to say, please come to the Minnesota Zoo in Apple Valley and visit the world. Thank you very much. I appreciate your wisdom, Mr. Chair, for being an author in this bill. And I thank you all for listening this morning. Choose wisely. I believe this is a very great investment for our state, our nation, and our world.
Any questions? Representative Khan.
Chairman, Mr. MP, or maybe the zoo, I don't know if I have any questions for the mayor, but that chart that you have about state funding and public zoos, you're absolutely sure that's state funding, not public funding?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Khan, that is not state funding, that is public funding. Again, as the mayor mentioned, there are only two zoos in the country that have the same model that we have, the state ownership and state operation. There are a number of zoos around the country that do receive state support in addition to their nonprofit support or their city support, but we are one of two wholly owned and operated state zoos.
Could I just add one other thing? Excuse me. You mentioned city support. We have created a resolution, and we passed it unanimously out of our city council of Apple Valley. The cities in Dakota County are following suit, and I'd like to be able to put this in as an exhibit, Mr. Chair.
That'd be fine. We'll have for the record.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Khan?
Because as someone from a city who supports an independent park system that's almost as expensive as the state park system, I'd always thought that there should be more local support up from the county or from the city of the Minnesota Zoo. But I'm also interested in what level, something that I've criticized the zoo for in the past, and I'm not sure that I've looked at it, I'd like to know if you start ranking zoos as to their private fundraising success. Where does the Minnesota Zoo fall on that rank? Has the Minnesota Zoo, or, it's like, well, when have you stopped eating your wife? But has the Minnesota Zoo improved from what was, I know many years ago, a very dismal record of private fundraising? And I don't mean admissions and that kind of thing. I mean really going out to the philanthropic community.
Director Emke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Khan, Yes, I think the over the last 15, or actually the last 10 years, the Zoo Foundation has grown in its contributions to the zoo by over by an order of magnitude. Thank you. In FY 1990, the total contributions of the foundation to the zoo were $245,000. This year, we're anticipating contributions to, in the level of $1.2 million, to give you a sense of the growth over the last 13 years.
I'd like to see something that's compared with the private backing of, let's just say, other zoos in the Midwest, like the Lincoln Park Zoo, the Milwaukee Zoo, the Not right now.
Okay.
I'd like to see how we're doing with people who we should consider up here.
Good question. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. MP, we've had a lot of discussion about conservation, education, and your emphasis on biodiversity, which I really appreciate with your new building. But what I didn't get an understanding of in your presentation of how much you're going to be concentrating on biodiversity in Minnesota or the Plain States versus the rest of the world.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, our master plan includes a major new component, which would be a Minnesota exhibit at the front door of the zoo. That is not part of this current capital request. It's the next stage of the master plan. So although the Biodiversity Center will contain compare and contrast type exhibits that relate those exotic habitats to Minnesota, the real emphasis will be in the next phase of the master plan in what we're calling the Prairie's Edge, which would be an exhibit devoted exclusively to Minnesota ecosystems.
Representative Wagenius.
If I could follow up on that, then how long would it be before Minnesota children would know about the Prairie's Edge?
Director Graham?
Hard to say. Obviously, the timing of all of this, our master plan originally called for the Prairie's Edge exhibit to open in 2008. Given the setback that we had 2 years ago, that's been set back 2 years. I will add, however, that we do currently have a Minnesota Trail exhibit at the zoo, with a focus on the native wildlife and native habitats of Minnesota. And part of our request for asset preservation would be a significant upgrade of that existing exhibit that would include a lot more interpretation to exactly the points that you raise.
Representative Wagenius.
As we talk about conservation, I mean, I worry so much. Do you have prairie chickens?
No, we don't, although we have a biologist who's working on the prairie chicken reintroduction program. We don't exhibit them, but we're involved in a captive breeding and restoration program.
Will you be having them when you get into your next phase, or at your dairy farm, or outside your dairy farm, or in part of your, I'm assuming you use native species. I'm not even going to ask that. But are you going to introduce them?
Prairie chickens are in the plan for the Prairie's Edge exhibit.
Okay. Representative Hoppe. Representative Wagenius.
One more question. I am worried about the time frame for the Minnesota portion. I will have to tell you that. I noticed a windmill at the farm when you showed the slide. How much electricity does that windmill provide for your, what proportion of electricity does that windmill provide for you?
I can't give you an answer on that. For the total zoo, it would be a very small proportion. For the farm, it probably operates a well. That would be my guess. We'll get back to you with some specifics on that.
I mean, if we're going to be educating children about windmills in Minnesota, that is an emerging, certainly energy source, and you have an opportunity there to educate on two sides. It's not the past, but the future. So I hope we could talk more about that, too.
I think to that point, we're planning in all of our new developments to use the most current standards of green architecture and to make that part of the message that we're providing the visitor, not just build efficient structures, but to talk about why it's done and how to do it.
Then can I assume, I mean, I if you're going to use green architecture, would you be using a windmill to generate some of the electricity for this new biodiversity? I mean, is that a possibility?
Wind, solar, geothermal, all of those are possibilities we'd like to look into.
I certainly would like to hear, as you are not just looking into the reality of using those as we look at this capital request.
Thank you.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, in light of your comments and Madam Mayor, in light of yours, I have a question. About local support, how much does the city of Apple Valley contribute to the zoo?
Well, let me just tell you that in terms of dollar amounts, we do not make a dollar amount contribution.
Okay.
But we certainly are collaborative in our efforts. Our police department and public safety efforts and issues around stormwater ponding, and we have done significant work in that way.
Thank you.
Hey, I would like to also recognize Chair of the Dakota County Commissioners, Will Brang, who's here today. Will, and I believe Will was mayor in Apple Valley when the zoo was getting established. And as I recall, Dakota County purchased the land out there and donated it to the state of Minnesota. Is that correct?
Thank you, Dennis. The question was asked earlier about what is the county.
But maybe you can come up and testify.
Yes.
Welcome to the committee. If you identify yourself for the record.
My name is Will Branning. I'm Dakota County Board of Commissioners, also on the Zoo Board, and was originally part of the Zoo Site Selection Committee back in the late 60s and early 70s. For the zoo to happen in Dakota County and in the city of Apple Valley, it was important that we put our foot forward. The county and the city worked together to contribute 460 acres to the zoo site. At today's value in terms of dollars, it's significant. In those days, it was very significant for the county. We have not contributed to the operations, but we have contributed to many of the infrastructure, such as the roads that go past it. Those are put on the program at 45-55 contributions between the city and the county. So those kinds of things have been done to provide for infrastructure. Anything else I could ask, I'd be pleased to do so. I've worked with Lee, and I've worked with many of the legislators, including yourself, and I think the zoo is a very, very important attraction to the county and to the state, as well as I did in the past with the city. So I'm very pleased and proud to be a part of it, and want to continue and would like to see it grow so we too can be like the North Carolina Zoo, because I've seen that in operation, and it's very good. At one time, for your background, I toured, and this was in the 60s and 70s, I toured every zoo in the United States through a program by which I was working with a company and could visit the cities and visited the zoos. I will tell you that there's no zoo that I know that has not received state support back then and still does today. Even our private city zoos, as we refer to them, are very much in the state function for visitors, attraction, as well as to make it economical for them to operate. It's a passion of mine, and I like to see this one grow to where it should be. As the original bill said back in the 1970s, it was pursued at the rate of approximately $50-55 million. Only half of it was funded in the first appropriations. Had it been fully implemented, we'd see much of the infrastructure that we're looking at today and what the master plan calls for. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe Representative Hoppe had a very good question about what is the local commitment to the zoo, and I think the history shows that commitment, so I thought that was important to get on the record. Representative Wasley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hoppe. I was going to ask that question myself. It was good to hear the history and get the background on the contributions from the city and the county. I'm curious whether your staffs have calculated the benefit to the city of Apple Valley or to Dakota County.
Mr. Moran?
I would assume there's an ongoing benefit to your business.
I do not have the numbers. I've seen numbers generated over the years as to what the zoo attraction means to Dakota County and also to the city in the past. I've been a county commissioner now for going on 8 years, so I can't speak to current. I will tell you, in the sense of when I was mayor of Apple Valley, much of the infrastructure, the police, the sewer water, the roads, much of that was contributed by the city to the benefit of the zoo. And that's not easy, nor is it the cheapest way to do it in many cases.
Can I just respond to that as well? Sure. If they can give me liberty to do that. There is benefit, there is economic benefit in the fact that our businesses will see the tourists come into our communities and use our restaurants and our facilities. Now let me tell you, not only will Apple Valley benefit, but Eagan will. And so will Rosemont, and so will Farmington, and so will Lakeville, and so will Burnsville, and on and on and on, Mendota Heights, because we all surround it. That is why the mayors and the city council members in those cities will support this resolution, because it makes good business sense for our business communities. So you have an attraction that brings that is a destination place, that brings you into a region, and you're going to have businesses benefit. Fitting. And I believe that when businesses benefit, the people will benefit. So yes, there is an economic advantage. I think it's one that will have a far ripple effect, far implication for our business community.
Director Empey, do we have a connection between the biggest tourist attraction, the Mega Mall, and the zoo?
Chairman Osmond, yes, we do. There is a direct public transit bus service that runs between the two. We'd like to obviously see a greater crossover between the visitors to the mall and the zoo, but the connection does exist. And again, one of the points brought out in our master plan was that if we develop attractions at the zoo that are different enough from the local zoos of the people who are visiting the mall, it has the potential to become a tourist destination. Right now, perhaps what we offer is not that different from what might be available in other local zoos, so the attraction value isn't quite there yet, but the potential is enormous.
Representative Wiginius.
That was an interesting question, Mr. Chair. Let me follow up by asking, once the Hiawatha line...
Pardon me?
Once the Hiawatha line opens up, your potential for visitors coming down the Hiawatha line and going into the bus from the Mega Mall to the zoo should be enormous. Are you planning any kind of advertising campaign? I mean, I know that that segment to the Mega Mall is the second segment to open, but it won't be that far in advance. Yeah, away from the first segment. Do you have plans for advertising for people who would be on that Hiawatha line?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiginius, currently we don't have specific plans for that. Our marketing budget has been one of the many things that have been challenged significantly over the last couple of years. With debt relief, that would free up some significant operating funds that we would like to put into marketing, and that would be a very obvious and great target to hit is that potential new market coming from downtown.
I understand you have some exhibits for us to but are we ready to go to that point?
Certainly. I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your support as bill author and for this hearing this morning. But we did bring a couple of special guests. Normally, our Zoomobile program animals do not come out when it's as cold as it is this morning, but our staff made some special provisions, and we've got a couple of terrific animals. I see a red-tailed hawk about to make an appearance.
And we tried to provide for added protection so that they were actually delivered inside the or arrived inside the ramp and came right through the door, so they didn't have to go through the outdoors.
And we want you to come to Apple Valley, please. to your Minnesota Zoo and visit. And I think you're going to be quite impressed with what you see and what the potential is.
Rachel, would you like to tell us about this guy?
Thank you, Chairman, and the rest of you. It's a delight to be here. My name's Rachel, and this is one of our wonderful volunteers, Pat Coons, has been volunteering with the zoo for 24 years, and I've been with the zoo for 10 years now. I work with the Zoomobile, which is we bring the zoo to you, and we go out and we do educational, hopefully entertaining, live animal shows, mostly for school-aged children. I have the best job. I do what I love. I love what I do, and I get paid for it. And it's actually a real dream come true, because when I was a kid growing up in elementary school in upstate New York, there was a guy that would come to our school, and he'd bring a live animal with him. And every year, I would look forward to that visit of all the assembly programs that we got. And as a kid sitting out there, elementary school, I thought, someday that's what I want to do. And I share that story with kids because I believe dreams can come true. And because that guy impressed me so much with his love and his passion for the outdoors, it's a real dream come true to be able to then sort of complete that circle and live out that dream for myself. We bring animals like the red-tailed hawk, and we've also got a chinchilla with us, and many different types of birds, mammals, reptiles, amphibians, bugs, all sorts of critters, and do these educational programs for kids traveling in the Zoomobile. There are four full-time employees, and I'm part-time with the Zoomobile. The red-tailed hawk, named for its rufous red tail, one of our very common Minnesota raptors. Raptor is comes from the Latin word raptori, which literally means to seize or to grasp. And that's exactly what those talons are doing on this very thick leather glove of mine. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a treat. I don't know if that's ever happened in all the time. I mean, usually I see something out the other end, which, of course, is always the highlight of the program. They may not remember anything else, but they'll remember when the bird pooped. So what that was a cast, and that's what they do every day. They usually cast up the remains of the animals that they ate the prior day. So that would be a little mixture of, I fed a little chicken, a couple of mice yesterday. They take all the stuff that they can't digest, the bones, the teeth, and the fur, make a nice little pellet out of it, and then they cough it back up. And that's to keep themselves light, because they're always waiting for an opportunity to fly and soar and pounce on that little rodent. And it also helps, they put the fur on the outside so that when they cough it back up, of course, it doesn't irritate their esophagus. This one's a hawk cast. Exactly. Yeah. Now we have a little predator-prey relationship going on here. Working here, I'm sure you know what that's all about. The keen eyesight, the curved beak, the talons, all signs of a bird of prey. And, we engage the audience in many different storytelling techniques, and so I always like to work music in somehow, and so I thought it's a nice stage for a little rap song. Would you like to hear a rap?
Yeah.
It's called the Raptor Rap, and it goes like this. Yo, I'm a raptor. Take a look at my beak. I got wings out to here and talons on my feet. Now some little birdies go tweet, tweet, tweet. Well, they like to eat seeds, but I like to eat meat, because I'm a raptor, I'm a raptor, I'm a rap, rap, raptor. I'm a raptor, I'm a raptor. What's that you say? I'm a raptor, yeah. I'm a bird of prey. Now the farmer's giving me a warm congratulations because I'm keeping down the roaching population. Just one more thing, an amazing sensation. We hunt year-round, never take a vacation. I'm a raptor, I'm a raptor, I'm a raptor. I'm a raptor, I'm a raptor. What's that you say? I'm a raptor, yeah. I'm a bird of prey. What's up with that? Well, kids remember a little bit more when you put it in a rhyme like that, and they keeps them engaged, and that's exactly what we want to do. And I want to just we'll bring out, we'll show the chinchilla here and talk a little bit about her, the chinchilla from the mountains of Peru down in South America. Way up, 7,000 to 10,000 feet up in the air. So it's a good thing that that chinchilla is wearing its fur coat. And I always say that the most perfect fur coat belongs to the animal that grows it. So she's wearing a very perfect fur coat for her. That fur is, they have 60 hairs per follicle. We have only one hair per follicle, so you can imagine that thick, dense, extremely soft fur. In fact, the softest fur in the world. And those little, those whiskers, very good adaptations. We talk a lot about adaptations in our programs. And we have programs that focus on Minnesota animals. We have another program focusing on tropical rainforest animals. And then another one that's sort of a catch-all. It's called All Things Connected. We talk about how we are all connected. Just like the Native Americans say, we did not weave the web of life. We are merely a strand in it. And everything that we do affects the rest of the strand. So we talk a lot about that in the circle of life, which, of course, the kids know the name of that tune from The Lion King. So the adaptations on the chinchilla, those long whiskers, they use those to find the little holes that they need to go into, the rocky outcroppings, to get away from birds of prey. And they have actually an inner ear inside of that outer ear that makes their hearing very, very acute. And, of course, the kids always like to hear about the dust baths that the chinchillas take in order to dry up the oils that get on their fur. They take a little bath in dust or volcanic ash, and it's always actually one of my highlights when I get to go back to the zoo and I put all the animals back in their enclosures, is to give the chinchilla a little dust bath. We put her in a little box and she rolls and flips and turns around, and it sort of does her impression of who's that character from Snoopy that walks around with the cloud of smoke? Yeah.
It's the red tail that we see around, flying around up in the...
Yeah, it's regular in our area.
Yeah.
If you see a large bird of prey doing that circling, you know, it's catching the thermals, the warm air as it rises, just spreading its wings, not really having to flap very much. Like I tell kids, birds of prey know they're cool. They just soar. They see all those other little birds flapping, 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 but they've got the big, powerful wings, and they've learned how to harness the wind and those warm air currents as they rise. And so they just soar. And they're constantly on the lookout for those little rodents, and to keep the balance of nature in balance. And that's really what it's all about. The nature of nature is balance, and I think the nature of human nature is balance. And that's this raptor's job, is to keep things in balance. And I think it's our job to try to help nature stay in balance as well. And that's a big message of Minnesota Zoo.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
Are there any questions?
I want to feel the chinchilla.
You want to feel the chinchilla. Is that okay?
I want the hawk to feel my scene.
You don't really use to the
cold. Oh, I tell you, there it is.
How do you get the hawk from flying if you're not in
the
What was your what was the question?
My question was, how did the hawk from sort of the plebs wings and go to an open chair? I think that's pretty amazing.
And your answer?
Well, I'm as you see, I'm keeping his back towards the chinchilla, so he's got a lot of other things taking his attention right now.
What if we clear the chairs and just let the chinchilla go?
That was a good comeback on that.
That was a great reason to suppress them.
Boy, Joe, you walk into that. You walk into a lot of
this. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions members have? Commissioner, do you have something you want to say?
I want to express a sincere thank you to you, Mr. Chair, and to all the committee members. Should there be any questions in the future, I'm always available to visit and or answer any questions in the future. I thank you very much.
Okay. Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's hard to follow that. I want to thank Mr. Emke and the other testifiers for your presentation today, and I appreciate all the hard work that you've done down at the zoo. And I know that, Mr. Emke, when you came to the zoo several years ago, it was on a national search, and we're really honored to have you be here in Minnesota, so thank you. I just have a couple questions, which I think can be answered pretty quickly. With your original $48 million request, I see that the governor has approved $34.2 million of that, and I can't tell with the asset preservation and the gateway part of the request. Is that what the 25 goes to specifically, or will it go to some of the biodiversity as well?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tinglestad, the governor's recommendation is for $19 million for new capital projects, which will pay for the gateway to the North Bears of the Surrey exhibit in its entirety, and $6 million for asset preservation. So it does not include any funding for the Biodiversity Center. That said, as Susan Palumbo pointed out, the Zoo Foundation would be ready at that level to begin a major capital campaign to begin developing the funds for the Biodiversity Center.
Thank you. And then just to follow up on that, I was looking through the frequently asked questions that you had here, and I see that for the Gateway to the North, the increased operating costs are $676,000, which said you'll be offset by additional revenue. And most of that, I assume, will be in the, you estimate a 10% increase in attendance because of that exhibit. And I'm just wondering, so does that truly, the attendance increase, truly offset the operating cost on that?
Representative Tinglestad, it's not just the improved attendance, it's also the development of the event center, which will be a major new revenue stream that will help offset the cost. And in addition to that, one of the things we're looking at is, with this level of state investment, we know we can do better in our private fundraising efforts, and we're counting on increasing that level of private support as well.
And then just one final question, Mr. Chair. So you had mentioned with the $9.2 million debt relief that would open up about $1 million a year in debt service that you've been paying on that. You mentioned later about some of that would go into marketing. What are your other plans for that $1 million that would be freed up?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tinglestad, I will pass that question off to Peggy Adelman, our CFO.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tinglestad, members of the committee, Peggy Adelman, Chief Financial Officer at the Minnesota Zoo. Our board of directors has not come up with a final plan. The initial things that we're looking at, first of all, we have the across-the-board cut that the legislature passed last year in the state government bill, and so $135,000 off the top would go towards that. We also have the gap in the health insurance and step increase costs, and that's we're estimating about $150,000. We then have a cash flow account at the zoo where, because our busy season is in the summer and the state fiscal year begins July 1st, it always gets a little dicey in May and June because if we have bad weather weekends, our attendance goes down, and so we need some type of cushion. This year, because of budget cuts, we've taken that down to $400,000. Our board of directors at a minimum likes that at $500,000, and so restoring that is another almost given. Beyond that, we're just in the preliminary discussions because each of our board members has their idea and each of our staff members has their idea. But we're looking at a number of things like advertising. We're looking at the types of things that we have had to cut back on with the Wells Fargo Family Farm. That's now just going to be open from Memorial Day to Labor Day. We'd like to be able to look at the shoulder season. We've got a lot of school kids who come in May. If we could add back a little bit there. So those are under discussion, and as the legislature progresses through this session, we'll be working with our board and we'll be able to answer that more fully down the road. Mr. Chair, the other thing that I'd like to mention, because there's been a lot of discussion of public-private partnerships and the contributions that the foundation brings in, the zoo really approaches companies in two ways. We approach the foundations for those contributions, but if we aren't successful there, we also approach their marketing departments. And we bring in quite a bit of money for our special events. We just had Animals, Books, and Children Weekend in one weekend in January. And so we'll get co-sponsors, and they will contribute. Sometimes it's in-kind donations that we can then give out to some of our guests. But a lot of times they will also provide a sponsorship fee, and then we include them in our advertising. We bring in a lot of money that way. Talking about the local area with Dakota County and the city of Apple Valley, those are businesses that we target. Dakota Electric, which is the main utility for the zoo, is a wonderful partner and helps sponsor things. They, every year, for a number of years, have done all zoo rentals, which, again, renting out our space is a very positive partnership. Some of the local restaurants, when guests come and ask our guest services where are places to eat, we can refer them to those restaurants. Those restaurants also are places that are willing to provide some sponsorship opportunities. So the public-private partnership also extends to Apple Valley and Dakota County.
Okay. Representative Wozlik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. I know we're running out of time. Looking at the resolution from the city of Apple Valley, it mentions that they support the zoo's request, and when I look at the number, it's about 43% of what you requested that the governor has recommended. And I understand that there'll be public-private partnerships, and the foundation will augment some of those dollars on program. But the part I'm really curious about is the asset preservation. Having spent 9 years in local government on a local school board, I know it's very frustrating. You have maintenance needs, and you have this isn't real sexy stuff that you can sell. I mean, it's day-to-day maintenance, and it's very important. And I think in the past, the state hasn't really supported that. When I look at your numbers, you're down $4 million from what you've requested. And how are you going to balance that, the asset preservation portion? I guess my question is, what's being left out?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wozlik, probably every state agency that has buildings comes before and talks about the iceberg and the study that was done by the Department of Administration. And we can always continue to go down the list. The $6 million is $4 million less than our request. It's $3 million more than what we've gotten in the past bonding bill. So what we try and do is we work on a continuous basis with our staff on developing a list of the highest priority needs, and whatever appropriation we receive we start going down that list. There's always an emergency that you need, the leaking roof that wasn't on the list that now has to be fixed. What's left off in that $4 million gap, I can get you kind of the current thinking list and what is off the between the $6 million and the $10
million. Yep. Can I just respond to the city of Apple Valley and the rest of the cities didn't want to limit your potential. We understand that the governor has allocated the amount that he has requested, but we feel that if you can see fit to go further than that, we would see that as wise and a wise investment.
Good, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your presentation. And anything else, members? We are adjourned.